Working at a growing business,
thank you to our sponsors and underwriters.
The new business hat.
Please remember
the buying toner for the coffee machine.
Buy local. Visit www.huntertonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
I rock soft. So I eat Belveeta soft baked breakfast biscuits, a tasty breakfast option for nutritious morning energy. It's just what I want before writing a flute solo that will softly rock every dentist's office around. Try Belveeta soft baked in oats and chocolate, cinnamon, mixed berry, and banana bread. Belveeta, mourn and win.
Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's main opposition has proposed splitting the term between two leaders, but is now reconsidering that plan if they win today's election.
Hello, my name is Robert Burns. My website is bobburnspeaks.com, and I'm inviting you to listen to my show at 1 o'clock on Friday afternoons on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, entitled Awaken to Your Purpose.
You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce.
Not a lot of people.
Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 4.
Found out, but now I know. So listen to the show, and maybe that'll promote you to awaken to your purpose. And thank you so much. Hello, my name is Robert Burns. My website is bobburnspeaks.com, and I'm inviting...
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it.
Hello, my name is Robert Burns. My website is bobburnspeaks.com, and I'm inviting you to listen to my show at 1 o'clock on Friday afternoons on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, entitled Awaken to Your Purpose. How many people walk through life awake and knowing why they were incarnated here in this beautiful planet? Not a lot of people do. I was in my late 40s by the time I found out, but now I know. So listen to the show, and maybe that'll promote you to awaken to your purpose. And thank you so much.
Well, good afternoon on this beautiful, and I mean beautiful, Friday afternoon. Sorry if you had to work, as I did. Traffic is not going to be good this week, and somehow we're... Hope you didn't hurt your ears there. It's Friday afternoon, as we know. 4 o'clock, a few minutes after, and we're getting a lot of static here. Hope you're not, and I hope you can hear me. And let me tell you about the weather tonight. Supposed to be partly cloudy. Saturday, a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms, mainly after 3 p.m. So it should be high of about 88, mostly sunny in the morning, and then only about a 20% chance of scattered thunderstorm. So we know what that is. Now, on to Saturday night, we have about a 30% chance of thunderstorms. So first of all, there's a chance of showers, thunderstorms mainly after 9 p.m., and then low only about 67 degrees, only about a 30% chance of precipitation. And then into Sunday, there's about a 30% chance of thunderstorms. And by Sunday night, a 20% slight chance of thunderstorms, and then partly cloudy. So I hope for anybody who's going to the Black Potato Festival, yesterday it was beautiful, of course. Thursday it started. Today, Friday, it's going on all day today. So you certainly can get some good weather today and tonight. And by tomorrow, it'll be continuing tomorrow. All day tomorrow. It's at the Red Mill, if you've never been. It's, very interesting. A lot of musical acts, two stages, and so there's always one stage and then a second stage. I think they, at least last night, they started on the river stage, and then they went to the other stage after that. There's both the quarry stage and the river stage. So how about today? Quarry stage at 6:30. That they start at 6:30 on the quarry stage, and again they start at 6 o'clock on the river stage. Then they go to 6:30 the quarry stage, which is very close, And then back 7:30 to the River Stage. Those programs are half an hour. And then on to an hour program on the Quarry Stage. But one thing I would really recommend, because I forgot to do it yesterday, is to take a chair, take chairs. There's a lawn near the Quarry Stage, but really there's nothing, nowhere to sit near the River Stage. And you'll be much more comfortable if you take your lawn chair or chair. And good groups. I mean, they're really lots happening. I think this is about their 22nd annual event here in Clinton. And I really enjoyed seeing friends last night who were playing, including Jay Thatcher and one other attorney and his brother. They were playing on the Steve O'Malley and Owen O'Malley and Jay Thatcher were playing at 6 o'clock last night. They started it off on the River Stage. Really good guys. I mean, and good, really enjoyable music, a variety of music. But it's something to do, and you don't have to travel far. So, as I said, tomorrow, mostly sunny, and then there will be a chance of thunderstorms. By the way, it started, as I said, at 6 o'clock last night. Tonight, again, it goes starts at 6 o'clock and probably goes on until about 10:30. Tomorrow, Saturday, starts at 11:15 and then goes on till probably around 10:30. And, tomorrow it starts at 12 o'clock today. And then on Saturday it starts at 12 noon, and then on actually it goes to River Stage. They're still going to have people performing at midnight, so that should be that's Saturday. And then Sunday they start at 12:45, and you can go on the internet, obviously. And then the last performance starts at about 6:30, although many of us, I think, will be watching the World Cup, the finals between Croatia and France, and we'll talk more about that on the Sports Guys. So I'm going to bring a couple sponsors, and then I'll tell you what's happening in the news.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on 100 in Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@100-chamber.org. You're listening to WHCR-DB, 100inchamberradio.com, brought to you by the 100in County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in a critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
Well, good afternoon. Again, I'm Pat Smits. I'm an attorney here in Hunterdon County. I limit my practice to family law matters. And actually, I am going to answer a few questions today that people have asked me. And I do not take calls because I don't want to get into personal and can't give any personal advice over the phone. But there are some general questions that, you know, come up from time to time that I thought I'd, if I have time, I'll talk about. So what happens, what has been happening, one of the things that people need to know is that attorneys and judges are held to, in fact, higher standards. There is a New Jersey judge under fire for allegedly acting belligerently after her daughters were expelled from their parochial school. And she's disputing that she violated judicial ethics during the incident, but she's obviously under much more scrutiny than the ordinary parent would be. So I don't think she's getting any good news on this Friday the 13th. Hope none of you believe in that superstition, but if I had, I wouldn't even be here. Some people I know won't leave the house on Friday the 13th. They're the ones that will probably fall in their house. So the other thing in family law that, of course, is becoming a real concern is that technology, as we know, is rapidly advancing, and it becomes more sophisticated. So attorneys, litigants, and the courts have to grapple with the use of modern surveillance in the control of litigation and family matters. Surveillance can be useful, of course, in some situations, and litigants often resort to surveillance of their spouse to get what they perceive is valuable evidence. Frankly, a lot of their time is wasted because, at least in New Jersey, even if you catch someone in adultery during the marriage, it's really not significant. Most cases now are filed based on no fault, and certainly if you can prove dissipation of assets, that's when it becomes significant. But unless there's dissipation of assets, it's a waste of time. Some people hire detectives, even now hire detectives because they want to know. But as far as being helpful in the divorce, it really isn't. So there have been approved for publication. Again, the appellate division, there was a case, a criminal case approved. And in this case, the defendant appealed his denial. He filed a motion to dismiss the indictment and then filed an appeal. And the defendant in this case was convicted of DWI, meaning drunk driving, and refusal. So what people need to know in New Jersey is if you refuse to take a breathalyzer, that's a separate offense. In any event, he was convicted of DWI and refusal to take the breathalyzer. So during the period of his refusal, suspension. That's a separate suspension. And he was stopped by the police for operating a motor vehicle during that suspension. And after his motion to dismiss that indictment was denied, he entered a guilty plea and was sentenced to the statutory minimum of 180 days of incarceration. So understand, New Jersey penalties after that first offense, and even during the first offense, but it's a double whammy if someone refuses to take the breathalyzer and is still convicted of DWI because they're convicted of two things. So on appeal, the defendant argued that a charge of DWI or refusal could not be used to enhance the penalties of the other charge. And he further argued that the relevant language of the statute was ambiguous and triggered the rule of leniency, which would have compelled interpretation of the statute requiring dismissal of the indictment. And the appellate court disagreed and affirmed the defendant's conviction and vacated the stay of his sentence. The appellate court held that the statutory language was not ambiguous, and even if there was legislative history related to the two, and whether that legislative history revealed that a conviction of DWI and refusal are referred to interchangeably as predicate convictions, that really didn't make any difference. So it's tough in New Jersey to win those appeals, and tough if you're convicted of DWI, or especially if you're convicted of driving while your license is suspended, which would be suspended in this case both for the DWI conviction and for the refusal conviction. So, moral of the story, get somebody to drive, call somebody, use an Uber or whatever to get home if you're drinking. The interesting case as far as medical marijuana, a workers' comp judge has ordered the New Jersey municipality to pay for an injured worker's medical marijuana, and brushing aside an insurance carrier's objections stemming from the drug statute as a controlled substance under the federal law. So in this case, the judge said that's going to help him and he's entitled to it. So there's also a call out for New Jersey Bar Association members who can volunteer time and resources and services and are unable to get more training to help families who are separated at the border. Really important thing. Anybody who knows any undocumented migrants in this area who have American-born children, I have a pro bono project, meaning a free project, where I can help them sign a power of attorney in case the parent is detained. Because what's happening with these children is, unless there's someone who is here to care for the U.S.-born children, if their parents have not signed such a power of attorney, children can easily end up with as wards of DCPMP. And frankly, if there's someone to care for the children, if a parent is detained, that's a much better outcome, certainly for the children and also for the our state. I mean, our resources are tight enough. I mean, DCPMP, they're just overwhelmed, and they don't need to be overwhelmed even further trying to care for these children. And, of course, the children have the right to stay in this country. And, of course, we don't know how long the parent is going to be detained. But it is now happening much more often. And I'm not talking about detained because they've done any criminal act. Detained because they're here and they're undocumented. Now, granted, if they came across the border, it is a misdemeanor. Not a felony, but it's a misdemeanor. And if they came through an amnesty, of course, that's not... Most of the undocumented people are not here. If they've been granted temporary amnesty, they're going through the process. But if they didn't show up to court, that's another story. So that there was a family law case approved for publication, and this was the state appeal from an appellate division's judgment. So this is the Supreme Court appellate division judgment, and what the appellate division did is they reversed the defendant's he was adjudicated as delinquent. And so the defendant minor was charged with committing sexual assault by conduct on a schoolmate while they rode the school bus. Can you imagine? Now we have to worry about kids on school buses. But in any event, the family court conducted a hearing to determine the admissibility of the victim's testimony. In this case, the victim suffered from severe developmental disabilities and was unable to distinguish between reality and fantasy during an interview with the police. So during its questioning of the victim, the family court found him unable to answer questions in an accurate or truthful manner and deemed him not competent to testify. However, the family court permitted the state to proceed with direct examination pursuant to the tender years exception. So there's a tender years exception under a rule. And in that response, the defendant presented testimony of adult supervisors on the bus who testified that the defendant did not sit near the victim. The family court adjudicated the defendant delinquent, but the appellate division reversed the adjudication, ruling that the victim's unavailability for cross-examination violated the defendant's confrontational clause rights. In other words, there is a constitutional right to confront your accuser. So the appellate division remanded the case to the family court to determine whether the remaining evidence supported an adjudication of delinquency. Now, there was an appeal from the appellate division, and the Supreme Court ruled the defendant's adjudication could be reversed with prejudice on state law grounds. So the Supreme Court agreed that the victim's pre-recorded statement did not have sufficient truthfulness to permit its introduction at trial. The court further ruled that the remaining evidence was insufficient to support an adjudication of delinquency. As a final matter, the Supreme Court found that the incompetency proviso of the rule, and it's a specific rule, 803C27, was flawed because it could lead to the admission of testimony from a child incapable of understanding the duty to tell the truth or of separating fantasy from reality. So now that the rules, they're basically saying, hey, look, this rule must be amended to make it clear that, you know, you have to have a rule that cannot lead to the admission of testimony of a child who is incapable of understanding the duty to tell the truth or of separating fantasy from reality. And that's always one of the significant problems with young children because, you know, do they know what's true and what's not true? And then, of course, some children would have problems with determining whether it's fantasy or reality. And I think we all know that when we have young children. And, you know, but there is a point where children, of course, are capable of, you know, doing what they need to do in order to testify. And they know the difference between truth and not truth. And so judges walk a very fine line there. And they usually do it very, very well. So what else is happening? I did mention New Jersey Bar is sharing information to try to help immigrant children. And there is a way to go on the New Jersey website for the Bar Association to find volunteer opportunities to help immigrant children and their families who were separated. As I said, I am doing something to help families here that won't prevent separation, but will, in fact, protect the parents so that they can do what they need for their children in case they're detained. So that, I hope many attorneys are helping because these children need it. Very young children are often have to go into court by themselves in immigration court. So in any event, this is important. In fact, there is an introduction and a 90-minute session starting at 10 a.m. at Rutgers Law School on July 17th. All of my attorney friends are hearing about this. If you know any attorneys, it's very important. It's really important to protect these children And, of course, I'm passionate about it because I lived in Guatemala. I see what's happening. These people are coming here to escape the gangs. Many of the gangs started in Latin America after being gang members from this country were deported, as they should have been, don't get me wrong. But it is a huge problem. So now a Mercer County judge ruled that, and this was first impression, the judge has allowed claims lodged under the state law against discrimination to move forward in a putative class suit alleging sexual abuse of inmates at the women's prison here in Hunterdon County, Edna Mahan. Okay, so what else is going on? There's a consumer protection case that was decided by the Third Circuit. That's federal, of course. And the defendants in that case appealed from the district court, and the district court granted the plaintiff's motion to remand after the defendants removed the case under the Class Action Fairness Act. So the district court granted the remand pursuant to local controversy exception to district court action. And the court noted in this case, so it went up to the Third Circuit, which is a federal appeals court. And the court noted that district courts had jurisdiction over class actions with an amount in controversy greater than $5 million, minimally diverse parties, and a class of at least 100 members. So that's where, that's what happens with a class action in the federal court. So in this case, the parties concurred that the case was subject to removal under the exception, meaning under CAFCA's local controversy exception, unless an exception to removal was met. So everybody said yes, unless there was an exception to removal, unless they met one of the exceptions, it should be removed. So the local controversy exception relied upon by the district court required remand for class actions involving a uniquely local controversy. So that was the local controversy exception. And so where more than two-thirds of the proposed plaintiff class and at least one defendant for whom significant relief, and this is quote, for whom significant relief, end quote, and, quote, whose alleged conduct forms a significant basis for the claims, was sought, and they were citizens in the state where the suit was filed. So at least two-thirds of the proposed plaintiff's class and one defendant. So on appeal, the defendants challenged the district court's conclusion that the defendant, in this case it was ADTSSI-TYCO, T-Y-C-O, was a local defendant. And they argued that it was a nominal party with no real interest in the litigation. Now, the court rejected the defendant's argument, finding that this entity was a real and substantial party because it allegedly participated in the charged conduct by including purportedly illegal language in the challenged consumer contracts. The court further found that the plaintiff's complaint sought significant relief from Tyco in the form of damages, including statutory damages, declaratory damages, and injunctive relief. Similarly, the court found that Tyco's conduct constituted a substantial portion of the plaintiff's claims, as plaintiff alleged that it used purportedly illegal contract language and entered into unlawful contracts with more than a third of the proposed class. So this is just came out. this case was filed. I'm not sure. It was reported this week. So let's come back after providing you with some news from our sponsors who support the Chamber. And I hope you support them and the Chamber.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Okay, back again and talking about some other cases that have been decided this week, approved for publication. The federal case, of course, was approved for publication, and then there's a contract case that was decided by this appellate division here in New Jersey. The case is Egg Harbor Care Center versus, and I'm pronouncing this wrong, Shir Dhurali. It is an important case for people to think about because in this case, the plaintiff, Egg Harbor Care Center, appealed from the trial court's dismissal of its complaint. So what happened is that before moving to New Jersey, the defendant executed a durable general power of attorney, naming his son, Corey Pagano, as attorney in fact. Now, Pagano had not been to New Jersey in the past 17 years, and the defendant was later admitted. So the father was admitted to the care center at Egg Harbor Care Center. And he was admitted there after suffering a stroke and a broken hip. So the defendant and her sister executed an admission agreement, and Pagano neither read nor signed the agreement, but instead was listed as, quote, other person to be notified, end quote. The defendant's sister agreed to advocate before social services and to be the co-guarantor of defendant's payment obligations. So accordingly, defendant's sister applied on defendant's behalf for Medicaid benefits. However, the application was denied because Pagano had control of a bank account in defendant's name. Now remember, Pagano was had power of attorney, and as a result, he had control, and that was he had control of a bank account in the defendant's name that put her over the limit for Medicare eligibility. So one of the things that people have to realize is that there are very strict guidelines for Medicare eligibility. So in this case, Pagano ultimately spent down the assets to obtain approval of defendant's application. And plaintiff later filed suit to recover its costs during the delay of defendant's Medicaid application. In that case, Pagano moved to dismiss the action against him on the grounds that the trial court lacked personal jurisdiction. And then in response, the plaintiff noted that Pagano served as defendant's attorney in fact and had regular contact with the plaintiff. The trial court dismissed, and they granted a dismissal. So then on appeal, the care center, they appealed. And then the plaintiff, the care center, reiterated its arguments that they had before the trial court. So the appellate division rejected those arguments and affirmed. The court agreed that with the trial court, that Pagano had not availed himself of the laws and protections of New Jersey, as his relationship with the state arose solely from his relationship with his mother, who did reside here. The court held that Pagano could not expect to be called into the New Jersey courts, actually hauled into the New Jersey courts, based on the support he provided his mother as her attorney in fact, and an absence of any contractual relationship with the plaintiff. So the care center lost because they did not have Pagano guarantee any of this for his mother, and he did in fact spend down the money that he had held for her. But obviously the care center should have done more than what they did when they initially admitted someone that they thought would be on Medicaid. So there was another criminal case. This was a Holland versus Rosen, and Holland, the appellants, appealed from the district court's ruling denying a preliminary injunction in their complaint challenging the New Jersey Criminal Justice Reform Act, which replaced the New Jersey's monetary bail system with a framework prioritizing the use of non-monetary conditions. So that's what's happened. Bail reform means that there is an attempt that prioritizes the non-monetary conditions of release. And, of course, the bail bondsmen were real unhappy about that because suddenly most of the people they make money from are, in fact, going to be released without bail. So they complained that the Reform Act violated the Fourth Amendment, the Eighth Amendment, and the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment and sought an injunction against the defendants, meaning the state of New Jersey, really, to preclude them from enforcing the act to allow restrictions on pretrial liberty without offering the option of monetary bail. So the plaintiffs in this case were Britton Holland, a criminal defendant facing second-degree assault charges on pretrial release with conditions of home detention. And her conditions are home detention and electric monitoring. The other plaintiff is the Lexington National Insurance Corporation, and they are a bail bond and corporate surety company. And they operate with independent bail bondsmen so that their revenue, a substantial portion of their revenue, was from funding bonds. Now, the plaintiffs filed a class action complaint, and the district court denied the request for preliminary injunction. And they first ruled that while Holland had standing as a pretrial criminal defendant, Lexington, the company, lacked standing because it failed to provide that criminal defendants lacked the ability to pursue claims that only the company could pursue. On the merits, the district court ruled that there was no constitutional right to monetary bail, the denial of which did not violate due process. So these are important things, not that anybody out there ever wants to get arrested and held on bail. But anyway, the district court noted that the plaintiff Holland could seek modification of his pretrial release in state court. And so that, as I said, on appeal, the court affirmed. First, the appellate court agreed that Holland possessed standing while the firm Lexington did not, because Holland's request for the option of monetary bail would redress his injury of having restrictive conditions imposed on his pretrial release. However, the appellate court agreed that the plaintiffs were unlikely to succeed on the merits, and the court ruled against the second thing. As far as right to bail, they ruled that the Eighth Amendment's right to bail and 14th Amendment procedural due process did not include the right to monetary bail. So, you know, you do have it, but there's no right to monetary bail. So the bail for reform is you either get out on your own recognizance or you have to wait trial. And so what the people, the bail bondsmen, were hoping for is at least if you're not out on your own recognizance, that you would definitely be out as far as making bail. You could make bail. So what else is happening? Well, there's, of course, there's the new statute about surrogacy. That's certainly important. Some other, you know, strictly legal news for lawyers I don't think is really of interest. There's a big construction case against the borough of Bellmar, and the defendants appealed from the entry of a judgment against them in that case. Defendants had adopted an ordinance appropriating $4.1 million for construction of a public pavilion and authorizing issuance of bonds to finance the construction. Then after residents filed a protest petition to demand a referendum on the ordinance, the defendants authorized placement of the referendum on the November ballot. So the approval of the referendum did not include an interpretive statement for the ballot. Instead, the borough attorney submitted a statement to the county clerk without approval from the borough council. So if you notice, every time there's something that we need to vote on, they give us an explanation. So the major thing here probably was that the trial court did note that the defendants violated by depriving the plaintiffs of fair and free election, therefore entitling plaintiffs to attorney's fees and costs. And so that was really the major outcome of that. So not many people would be interested in that unless you're trying to figure out how you can go after Wynn and get legal fees. Not easy, of course, in most cases. So there, Camden County, there's been hit with a class action suit over its policy of performing strip searches on persons held on minor offenses when they're held at the county detention center. So you can, I don't know what's considered minor offenses. I think certainly most people, if it would include things like DWI, which is not minor, but I think still most people would really be pretty outraged if they had to strip because they were arrested for DWI. There's a man who settled the Bloomfield for false arrest after a violent traffic stop, and he's accepted $1.6 million to settle his suit in federal court. You know, folks, all this money comes out of the taxpayers. So it's important that our police forces are well trained and disciplined in the, by that I mean in the right way, so that these kinds of suits cannot be brought because nothing's happening to enable them to be brought. There was a State versus Chambers. Again, that was approved for publication. It was an intent to distribute. So it's probably one of the many ones that, you know, they're fairly common. The appeals are common. The fact that they're not often granted, they're similar enough that they're not published. When the cases are published, the court feels that there is some reason to do that. So I mentioned after a couple spots, we'll talk about some of the questions that I get in family law, just briefly before we end the program.
This is Tony Clark, paraplanner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you...
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in that critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
Okay, it's Pat Smith. I'm back. I'm going to some of the questions that people ask me, but this one is rather interesting. Is the percentage of marriages, first marriages that end in divorce, higher than the percentage of second marriages? Actually, no. And that's one of the reasons why people going into second marriages really should consider having a premarital agreement, so that if that marriage ends, at least it's going to be easier to split up. I mean, I'm always surprised at the people who go through horrendous divorces, don't even consider the next time to take a look and think about a premarital agreement. I don't mean anything unfair, but, you know, what's going to happen? And the reason is about 50% of first marriages end in divorce, 67% of second marriages end in divorce, and believe it or not, 74% of third marriages end in divorce. Now, I now this one I can't check for the whether it's authentic or not. But apparently, if you're 50 years old and single, and you go back to a high school reunion and meet an old high school friend, 70% of the people end up getting married. Now, wow, when you think about that, that's so think about whether or not, if you're single, you know, whether or not you even want to get back to that reunion. And of course, you know, most of us think about the people we knew in high school and remember them then. Lots of things have gone on since. So, you know, there's some foolish mistakes that people make, even when they're married. And I've said this over and over, and I've seen this happen. I have experienced this in some recent cases, so I bring it up. The wife or husband, but usually it's the wife who works in the family business, who is not covered under Social Security. Business thinks, well, you know, that way we can save money because the business would have to pay its share of Social Security. The wife who takes wages has to declare it and pay taxes and pay Social Security. However, it means that even if the parties stay married and the wife doesn't have her own Social Security benefits, the most she'll ever be able to get from the husband's share, and he doesn't have to pay it, but her maximum amount would be 50%. So if, for example, he's entitled to $1,200 a month, she would then be entitled to $600. So that together they would have $1,800, and of course, from that standpoint, it's an advantage. She's never paid anything in. However, the likelihood of her own Social Security being higher than that if she works is much greater. So people really need to look into that. The other thing that I'm always amazed at, that unless you absolutely have to, or anyone you know absolutely has to, the wife takes Social Security at age 62. That's a reduction in her benefits for the rest of her life. And so, you know, big can be a huge problem, especially if the wife lives much longer. And anyway, it's certainly a problem with people who are divorced. The other often question I am here is, does it make any difference in New Jersey if all the marital assets are held by one party? Well, in a divorce, it doesn't, because all the assets acquired during the marriage, except for an inheritance or gift from third parties, are subject to equitable distribution. The one difference, of course, you have to be careful about is having judgments against property that is in the name of one party, one spouse, because that there can be a lien against that. And there are other rules if, in fact, it's held jointly. There are other rules that really apply. So that's really, you know, another thing that people need to look at. Now, the new tax law, believe me, I think that many people, when they really take a look at this, it's going to be a significant concern for many families, especially families in New Jersey. Because remember, real estate and state taxes, the maximum deduction is going to be $10,000 a year. And that is obviously for families that live together. You file a joint tax return, you own property jointly, you don't get more. It's $10,000. Now, the other thing, it's the new law suspends the personal and dependency exemptions for the years 2018 through 2025. Now, the exemptions for 2018 would have been $4,000, for the parent who is entitled to the exemption. And that's also tied to the child tax credit. So that the even bigger thing, of course, is that alimony, until the new law, it was deductible from the income of the person who was paying it and included in the income of the person who was receiving the alimony after divorce. There are certain restrictions, but basically that was what it is. And the problem now is that anybody who's not divorced by December 31st of this year, the alimony will not be deductible and will not be includable. The problem with that, of course, is it was a way that the income earner, traditionally the husband, could pay more alimony to the wife because he was going to get to deduct it. Yes, she had to pay tax on it, but the reason it was done is that her tax, she'd be in a lower bracket. So the alimony provisions, you know, very important to get anybody who's paying alimony to get that divorce done by the end of this year. So that, what is alimony? Well, there's an Internal Revenue section that defines what's considered alimony under the Internal Revenue Code. The new regulations are called the Tax Cuts and Jobs Acts. I'm sorry, and Jobs Act. Tax cuts maybe, certainly for many people, maybe most people, it's not going to be a tax cut. And it's eliminated tax treatment of alimony that's been in place for more than 75 years. So that's really an impact. Yes, the federal government will get somewhat more money. However, it's going to put a burden on both someone who's paying support and somebody receiving support, because there's no way that, for example, if a husband's in a higher tax bracket and he could be thinking of maybe a 40% reduction between state and federal taxes, you know, so that the amount of alimony he pays would really only be costing him 60%. And granted, this isn't clear because, you know, I'm talking about some of the top levels. So, but an average, I mean, even if, the average is 25%, means that he would save taxes. And so if he pays alimony for every $100 he pays, it really is costing him $75. So they're no longer going to be able to enter into an agreement. I mean, right now you can enter an agreement that alimony is not tax deductible, but generally they are, because it makes sense to do it that way. Now, apparently, more taxpayers will be able to utilize the child tax credits, which will double for the years 2018 to 2025, if, in fact, you can claim tax credits, child tax credit. So that's, I guess that's what I meant to talk about that. Talking about now, ending the show, and hope to see you next week.
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
Well, good afternoon. We're going to be with you for the next hour on the Sports Guys. And but before that, I wanted to bring you the weather. And mixed weekend. Not as nice as last weekend, obviously. I'm not sure we could have many weekends as beautiful as last weekend. But today was a beautiful day. I don't know why there's some concern about hazardous weather, but this afternoon has been about 85 degrees, beautiful, sunny, bright. Seemed like it was more than 85 degrees, but that's maybe because I still don't have air conditioning in